This is The Pulse. Stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Shaping the Future. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It can feel like the future is a force that we're being swept toward, a different era powered by cutting-edge innovations and technologies. We think of life on distant planets.
Oh, my God. I'm on Mars.
Super smart machines.
Robots can free humans from the most repetitive and dangerous tasks.
New methods of transportation. Devon Powers likes to ask her students to imagine what kinds of cars they'll be driving one day.
Tell me what the future of cars is, and they'll all say, oh, it's driverless cars, like it's going to be flying cars.
Devon teaches advertising at Temple University in Philadelphia, and she cautions her students. The future tends to happen in small increments. Go see for yourselves.
Go outside, and I want you to walk around for 15 minutes and tell me what cars you saw. And then they'll come back and they'll be like, yeah, I saw a 1987 Chevy. I saw like a pickup truck that was dinged. And I was like, okay, well, that tells you that like whatever's happened, like those cars are not going away. They're going to be here in 5 years. So even if there's a driverless car, there's also going to be a beat up 1987 Chevy driving next to it. Right. So it's like the future does not change wholesale.
It's also not that far away. In some ways, we always have one foot in the future.
You know, if you say, hey, let's have lunch tomorrow, you've technically thought about the future of your life. If you save for retirement, you've technically thought about the future of your life. Or if you've ever made a plan for a vacation or a plan to marry your partner or anything like that, you've made a plan for the future.
But even though we're technically thinking about our future, the future, you know, in the travel to Mars and hand all control to the robots kind of way, it seems a bit scary.
Most people feel like a lot of things about the future are completely out of their hands. They can't control the economy. They can't control the climate. They can't control if their job is going to exist in a year.
And of course, this past year has been a stark reminder of this lack of control and shown us that our lives can shift quickly. But it has also opened our eyes to new possibilities, that we can do things differently. Today's episode is about the future, our worries and anxieties about it, our relationship with our future selves, and our ability to shape the future we want. Let's start with what we can predict about the more distant future and what it will bring. There are people whose job it is to forecast big changes and new trends. How do they do that? Reporter Alan Yu picks it up from here.
Devon Powers just wrote a book about that industry. It's called On Trend, The Business of Forecasting the Future.
The idea to me that people would pay for understanding the future, it just blew my mind. I didn't realize that that was a thing that somebody could do.
You can call it futurism or trend forecasting. It can be easy to roll your eyes at this. Like in this scene from the TV show Schitt's Creek, when a rich man, David Rose, loses his money and suddenly has to find a job.
What kind of job are you looking for?
Something in like art curating or trend forecasting.
Okay. Let's see. Not seeing anything in art curating or trend forecasting. That's weird.
Okay.
Do you have any other skills or areas of expertise?
I've been told I have really good taste.
Oh, well, that's good. Let's see. Oh, bag boy at the grocery store.
But trend forecasting is a serious business and more of a science than fortune telling. It involves studying the market to see what people already like, looking at what else is popular, and trying to figure out where the world could be in the future.
A lot of companies have to bet on particular products, correct? So it's like identifying, wow, which racehorse do you think might be winning the race, and how can we identify that?
Sam Devillard is a futurist at a company called Harmony Labs.
I was asked by a publishing company to understand what will be the next What are the next topics in the self-help book category, for example?
You might think she'd dig into the existing canon of self-help books, but instead, Sam looked elsewhere.
I would look into music, into dancing styles, into hairstyles, into makeup trends, into architecture trends, etc., etc., etc. And when I see a common denominator, then I feel, okay, this might be the zeitgeist formula.
Zeitgeist is a kind of mosaic. Fashion, movies, music, colors, patterns. Sam tries to think about a lot of pieces. For self-help books, for instance, she says that back in the early 2010s, Obama was president, and there was more of a sense of hope.
To believing in something that you can build. It was also a period of globalization, right? Like where we still believed in globalization, where it means that there are no real boundaries, that there are no real walls.
And in the past few years, the mood changed.
It's all more about a retraction, about not thinking too much about the future, thinking more about the present. We had Trump. It's not about globalization. It's about ethno-nationalism. It's retraction. It's about the roots. It's about identity. It's about DNA.
And she wonders if we might move away from those physical, grounded things like walls towards things that are earthy, airy, like the spiritual practice of shamanism.
Like, are there any bestsellers around shamanism? Not yet, but it's going to come.
When Sam tries to put her finger on the zeitgeist, she always thinks about one surprising factor. What drugs are trending right now?
If you think about cocaine, you think, when was it that this drug was really, really, let's say, yeah, we spoke a lot about this drug around the 80s, correct? So what does cocaine create? It can create a, let's say, bloated sense of self, confidence. It's extroversion, right? And what did we have in the 80s? It was an extroverted time. You had big hair, big shoulder pads, big bodies, muscles. It's no coincidence that cocaine was trending when the Mac Mansions were trending, when Terminator Rumble were trending.
It may sound like she's naming random 80s stuff, but where we hear nostalgic buzzwords, she hears a pattern. To understand her approach, it helps to know that her background is in art history.
First, I studied art history, comparative religion, and sociology in Germany, and was very enamored with the 16th century Spanish art. You could see correlations. Particular periods of time have similar formulas that will translate cross-categorically. So the type of music would correspond, have a similar style to the type of architecture, to the fashion, to the mannerisms, to the food, etc., etc., etc. And then at one point I thought, oh, what am I doing in the 16th century?
Her work is a little like art history, but in reverse. Art history looks at the products of a certain culture and tries to think, what does this say about the culture? Trend forecasting tries to understand the culture and think of the next product that people will need or want.
Also, the way how I started to interpret the world, and it's such fun when you can take any conversation snippet and see if, you know, if it fits into your system or doesn't, or if you could like improve the system of interpretation. And anyway, I thought, where can I do this? I thought, no way, academia is too myopic. No. And then I thought, fashion.
Sam says fashion is an industry where you interpret trends and you can get concrete results relatively quickly.
By the numbers, the sales numbers, that's very reassuring to see, did this hit the nerve or did this not hit the nerve?
For example, back in the 90s, she noticed a trend in clothing and styles that weren't symmetrical. She spotted this trend, reported it to her team and her client, and the result was an asymmetrical bag.
It's tiny, petite. It's, of course, like more a container for your keys, maybe your credit card, or who knows, a lipstick. It does not offer much space.
The design was not at all practical. It's shaped a little like a kidney, so no matter what you put in it, the weight just goes to one side. But it was a hit. Became a classic for her client, Christian Dior. They called it the saddlebag. It's been on Sex and the City. Beyonce had one a few years ago. In recent years, Sam has become interested in the methods of trend forecasting. She wants to know, how did the best forecasters get their incredible intuition?
I will not say clairvoyance in that classical sense. It's not looking into the crystal glass, but have a real, very good understanding of where things are moving.
She now teaches trend analysis and future forecasting at the Masters in Branding program at the School of Visual Arts in New York. She adds that not everyone uses her method, and also not everyone does it well.
There's a lot of bullshit as well.
So how can you tell what is that and what is good trend forecasting? Leia Zaidi is a futurist at the Future Today Institute. She says if forecasting is done well, you should come up with concrete advice for what's next.
A good strategy is actionable. It's not something that is meant to be nebulous. It's not, you know, a very fluffy description of like, you should consider this.
In other words, it should not be a horoscope, something that is so intentionally vague it could apply to almost anything. Leia said an example of a good strategy is you should invest in renewable energy, because the way the world is going, no matter what happens, that is going to be important. So futurism isn't predicting the future. It's a skill where you look for patterns, currents that drive culture. It's also an ability to see the world and imagine that it could be different. But who gets to shape what our future looks like may depend on how much power they have. When Elon Musk talks about the future of transportation as a network of underground tunnels, it gets attention.
What I think this really amounts to is an actual solution to the soul-crushing burden of traffic. This is something that I think will actually work.
It's Elon scalable. Musk can say, like, the future of transportation is Hyperloop. But he's just saying that, right? And I could stand up and say, like, the future of transportation is, like, me on my bike. But, like, people aren't listening to me. People aren't throwing millions of dollars at me when I say, ride in my bike.
That's Devon Powers again. She says we could all play a more active role in our own future.
Businesses have figured this out. And they figured it out in ways that have impacts on all of our lives. And so I think it's only fair to, and it's only sort of just for everyday individuals to also recognize that this is a practice that you can bring into your everyday life and that you can bring into your professional life so that you can kind of balance that control. And it's not just more powerful interests than you that are deciding what future you will live.
Once she realized this, she says she saw the world a little bit differently. For example, she lives in a quickly gentrifying neighborhood in Philadelphia. She was at a community meeting where property developers were telling neighbors about their plans to build more high-rises and parking and businesses.
They say things like, well, you know, this is the future, right? The future of Philadelphia is more, you know, tall buildings and more density on the streets and more people walking around, and you just have to sort of go with it. I started to intervene when I heard language like that. And I was like, the future is not predetermined, right? You don't get to tell me what my future is. And so that's just, you know, a very sort of small example. And it's not as though that way of thinking has stopped all of the development happening in my neighborhood. It for sure has not. But I think it's a very empowering way to think. We have seen across 2020, hundreds of thousands of people in this country saying, I want my life to look different. You know, I demand racial justice. You know, I demand healthcare. I demand a home. I demand a fairer wage. And I think we have seen, despite a lot of setbacks, I think we've also seen some moments of victory and some moments of awareness.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.